I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is
Whiskers.
We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
Today's a very special day.
Yeah.
It is a holiday special.
Yeah.
This is our first recording after a lovely Halloween, but yes. Also, this episode is going to post just days before the 50th anniversary of the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
No.
Now we have to pay him. No.
He's dead.
We have to pay his estate.
But yeah.
Which one would you rather talk about to start our episode today?
Do I want to talk about Halloween or the Edmund Fitzgerald?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
What a question.
This, how do you ask me such things?
This is like bringing the baby before King Solomon. It's that kind of question for you.
Oh, I don't know about that. But I mean, we got to go in chronological order of what has happened to us.
Oh, okay. I guess Halloween's more than 50 years old. So by chronological order... Did you enjoy your Halloween, dear?
I did. It was good. It was fun. It was kind of what I always want Halloween to be and never get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rainy?
I got to hand out candy.
Oh, yeah. Until it was rainy and all the kids disappeared.
It lasted hours before it rained.
Yeah.
Yes. We've spent the past few weeks helping a friend and her kid decorate their porch for Halloween to see the child's vision.
Elaborately, one might say.
The kid had this vision of a Jurassic World themed porch with the gate and raptor pens and raptor heads. She wanted full animatronics, but we had to reel her back a bit. And I really like making things out of cardboard. So yes. I was like, fuck yes, let's do this.
A lot of painting, a lot of cutting, so many zip ties.
The zip ties. A labyrinth
of zip ties if you just go up on the porch and see it from behind.
Drilling PVC piping.
I really like how the electric fences turned out.
Yes, we made electric fences. It looks great. So that was going on. And with it, it was, you know, well, we're going to also come over for Halloween and help pass out candy. Because we live not on a street that gets trick-or-treaters. And also not like in a house where anyone's going to like come to our door. And I love Halloween. I fucking love Halloween. And I also grew up in a town where no one trick-or-treated because it was like acres to the next house.
Right, right.
So my dream has always been like, I want to like hand out candy to children. And so I got to do that for hours. And their neighborhood was hopping.
Yes. While in character, or at least in costume, as a gift shop employee
of Jurassic World.
Jurassic World.
Yes. Yes. All of my dinosaur clothing was put to use. And I,
your Mr. DNA earrings.
Yes. And I made a little shoulder buddy like you get at amusement parks by like safety pinning one of Moki's like squeaky dinosaur toys to my shoulder. It was good. I liked it.
One of my favorite little touches of the display was early in the night when the you think it's going to be more of the itty-bitty kiddos.
Yeah.
The like, John Williams score was playing on a loop from the porch. But then when the sun went down, it switched to snarls and roars and the scary dinosaur noises.
Oh, you know why that actually happened? That was not, like, a planned thing.
No,
you
know but what? It did work out that way.
It did. But what happened was the kid forgot to send us her audio, so we just put on tracks of Jurassic Park. And then when she came back from trick-or-treating, she was like, this is my audio. And she had spliced all the dinosaur roaring and like grotesque dinosaur eating noises together and was like, no, you have to use this audio. Until we got tired of it. And then we just turned it off and put on Halloween music. Because we were the ones handing out candy with that music going.
Yeah.
She was not.
No.
Favorite costumes of the night.
Yeah.
Was the little girl dressed as Lavender from Matilda.
Mm-hmm.
It was spit an image. It was perfect.
She did have to, like, unzip her jacket to, you know.
Yes, to show
that's
us.
Just the way that Halloween is. It is the end of October. After
The tiny child is a dump truck.
A garbage
truck. Garbage truck.
Yes.
And his parents opening the back to put his candy in. It was very cute.
And then met another garbage truck on the hallway, and they just bounced at each other.
On the sidewalk.
Sidewalk, that's the word.
Yeah, they just kind of like,
it's called a sidewalk.
Because they're like two. So yeah. They're just like bouncing at each other, like, look at my truck.
I'm also a truck. Yeah, we love trucks.
But my favorite moment was those teenagers that were trick-or-treating for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was really sweet.
It was really sweet.
I hope they had a great night.
I hope they had a good time. I loved seeing so many, like, older kids out.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. So, do we have to talk about the Edmund Fitzgerald now?
Would you like to?
Okay.
What do you think is going to happen for the big 5-0 in a few days?
There's going to be a lot of memorials. Mm-hmm. Not here. I looked.
Well, why would there be? It's a completely different lake.
We have a maritime museum.
We do. It's lovely. But it's pretty much focused on the Chicago's rivers and lakes.
Yeah, we're too far from Superior. It's okay. I bought a book. I bought a new book about the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it's not just new to you. It's like new.
It's like
it came
out
like a couple months ago.
Or like a couple weeks ago, I think.
Oh, all right.
I think Whitefish Point has a event with the author, actually, for the anniversary. Yeah.
And they're doing a special thing with the bell. They always do, but I'm sure they're really going for it with a big round number anniversary.
They are. Detroit's doing a bunch of stuff, which is...
Well, it was headed to Detroit. It was on the route.
Yes. Oh, the craziest fucking shit, though, that I came across a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
There is a Edmund Fitzgerald Memorial Swim that is taking place.
That just seems like rubbing it in the nose of all those who died. Like, I could do it. Why can't you?
Yeah, maybe. It's like a relay, and it's starting from the position where it sank. Like, you're taking a boat out and jumping off the boat.
Yes.
And then they are doing the remainder of what the voyage was supposed to be down to Detroit.
Now, you have done a 5K that started and or ended in a graveyard. So, like, these things happen.
These things do. This is going to take, like, months?
Yes.
Like, weeks? Maybe it's happening next summer because it's, like, really cold right now
yes.
to do this.
Yeah.
But I only came across it recently when I was searching for, like, events. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, you can, like, pay to swim open miles or open water swim miles.
Upon miles.
Upon miles. Upon miles.
The entire length of Lake Huron. Sure. Sure.
Yeah. That sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
That does not sound great. No. I don't want to do that at all. Anyways.
Anyhow, that brings us to today's topic. Episode 5 of Sequest 2032, Chains of Command. This is written by Lee Goldberg and William Rabkin back from Smoke on the Water 2 weeks ago. And directed by Anson Williams, who directed Blindsided and Splashdown and Brave New World. That's right, 3 episodes in a row. He's back again.
Mm-hmm.
And we begin in the Philippine Sea inside the expanding borders of the Macronesian Alliance.
Oh, yeah. Well, we see a lot of things flying through the air that you're kind of like, are those missiles or
yes.
are those like ships?
They are futuristic missiles. They're not the smooth cylinders you might expect. Is this for radar deflection? I don't know, but it's to make them look futury.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we go to an island
yes.
within Macronesia there, where there is a station and a lady is stationed there at the station and is talking to others from Macronesia.
Yeah, she is on at the like Palau weapon station, and she's on the phone with the military command in New Australia.
Yes, not and, old Australia, New Australia.
And this lady is named Mara. She is played by Lisa Castaneda, who we previously saw in season 2. Do you want to guess?
She's Tony's aunt.
She's not Tony's aunt.
She kind of looks like she could be Tony's aunt.
Her character in Sympathy for the Deep was credited as Desperate Woman. So I have to think, is this the lady that Brody's boys almost assaulted that one time?
Oh.
I think it's that lady.
Maybe.
Do you think it's the same character?
Could be.
Do you think after being haunted by demons, she went and joined the Macronesian Navy?
I mean, she was talking about how, like, she finished her training and, like, this is where she gets to, like, test her skills is on the station. That's mm-hmm. really boring.
That's right. She is talking about how she did not get into the military to just, like, sit and look at screens all day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going with yes.
Mm-hmm.
Recent job change.
But the guy she's talking with disagrees on this. This incredibly southern U.S. man.
Yes.
Living and fighting for New Australia.
Yes.
Says, quote, nobody wants a war. It would mean Armageddon.
Ford's not a madman.
Yeah.
No.
And she's all like, what do you mean? There's bound to be a war. Look what happened at the Nexus Colony. And he's like, yeah, look what happened at the Nexus Colony. It looked like there was going to be a war, but then there wasn't. That'll just keep happening forever because war is bad.
And then she's like, oh my God. And they both notice that there are 10 warheads flying towards the island. UEO warheads.
And this happens twice this episode. This is the first time, and I love it. When there are missiles coming to you and there's nothing you can do, for 15 minutes, you just have to, like, sit there for about 15 seconds. No time to do anything but wait and die.
Yeah.
It's a good moment. It's juicy.
Just having to sit with it.
Mm-hmm.
You get good acting moments, and you get this guy saying, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we can't do anything.
Yeah, there's no time to, like, transfer your call to, like, your brother on a different island or whatever. Like, you're... Bye!
Yeah.
Yeah.
She and the island blow up.
That explosion looks really bad.
It does.
This is it's just a stock explosion effect pasted on top of this establishing shot, and it looks bad.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
It's not good. And so then Mr. Southern Gentleman is like, call up President Bourne and tell him that the UEO has declared war on Macronesia, in case he's not clear.
Yeah, yeah.
Just in case. Make sure you tack on that he declared war on us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In particular, not anyone, any other of the belligerent rivals that may or may not exist.
Yeah, I'm not sure anyone else exists at this point.
I mean, eventually that question will be answered.
But not yet, because we're going to the credits.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as we come out of the credits, there is a shuttle signaling to come aboard, and it does. And it's McGath, who has a message so important. He does not trust the vidlink. He's coming in person.
Oh my goodness. And he tells Ford to go away.
Yeah.
It's like, shoo, shoo.
This is for Hudson's eyes only. And as soon as they talk about, yeah, this preemptive missile strike, how you think Hudson is just jealous he didn't do it first? Like, wait, this was an option? God damn it.
Could have declared war in Macronesia.
Yeah.
Like, wish I would have thought of it.
You know how you know it wasn't his plan. He would have fired the missiles at Bourne personally, not some weapons base on an island somewhere.
True. Well, he's getting, like, a massage. Let's get Dion while we're at it, too.
Yeah. Just put, like, ricin gas in all the like, massage parlors of the world. Eventually, we're going to get that guy.
Yeah.
Because he loves it so steamy.
So, yeah, McGath fills him in. You know, these missiles blew up this Macronesia base. Hudson is like, well, who did it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We did.
Yeah, yeah. The official story that we told Macronesia is that there was a computer malfunction. We fixed it. We just tore that whole system out, and we're going to build it from the ground up. Can't have missiles firing themselves. That's really bad.
And he's like, okay, but where did it really come from? And they're like, well, it came from the Mariana Trench. We don't have a base there. Well... we kind of do, and, like, so, it kind of, they kind of stopped talking to us a while ago. And yeah, it's kind of bad.
So from like a military sci-fi point of view, my favorite part of this episode is the idea of building a nuclear-equipped launch base. Mm-hmm. And just, like, having tugboats drag it to a place and then they drop it there. That's great. I love that idea.
Yeah. Well, because you can't, like, hang out there to do it. People will catch on. But if you're like, oops, that fell off the boat.
And later, obviously, we're going to go to this base and there's an establishing shot of it in the trench. And it's this big, like, boxy crate-shaped station on spider legs anchoring it to the walls of the trench. Yeah. And like, oh, that's so cool.
Those legs are like grappling hooks, I think.
Yeah. Oh, I love that idea.
So, yeah, this base was put there like a year ago. And
behind enemy lines.
6 months ago. They stopped replying to their check-ins, mm-hmm. and they've sent two, like, recon vessels out who have just, like, disappeared. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Never reported back. Never come back. Definitely all dead.
So now that they've done preemptive strikes, apparently trying to start a global nuclear war, it's time to try again. Mm-hmm. And it's Hudson's job. He's got 24 hours from the time he gets these orders to either relieve the commander of the base and take control or destroy it. Just blow this thing to hell.
And you know why it's his job? It's because he has a history with the dude down there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The dude that they put down there, who knows what's happened in the last 6 months?
I mean, they're assuming he's still down there.
Yeah.
And you know what? He is. Yeah, he is.
But I do appreciate that they're like, I don't know, anything could have happened. He could have got eaten by a shark. We don't know.
You know, our theory of this was an accident of something autopiloted could be right.
It could be true. I don't know.
They could
all be dead down there.
They could have programmed robots at this point, and like they took over, and we don't know.
They're all sucking the blue goo out of our missiles. I don't know what could happen.
That is the plan, is he has to go relieve an admiral that he has a history with of some sort.
Yes.
Ooh, he looks very concerned.
Admiral Van Alden.
Yes. So we go to Dagwood, mm-hmm. who is looking at a cockroach.
He's just staring at that little roach, and Henderson walks over, is like, oh, I'll get that for you, and starts to stomp on it.
And he's like, no, it's a baby.
Grabs her foot before it comes down. Yeah.
He's like, no, it's not doing anything to you. We're going to protect it. And she has to explain, like, the cockroaches, you know, can be really bad.
They carry disease, yeah.
And he's like, well, I will put it in a container and then release it when we get to shore.
He's got a catch and release program. This is season 3, not season 2. So, like, they're not going to shore every 6 hours. So
it might be a while.
It might be a while.
But he's going to take care of it. And she's like, okay, fine. So then, though, over the, like, announcer, it's like, all personnel on watch report to the wardroom, mm-hmm. which is, like, a lot of fucking people. But when we get there...
It turns out to just be our main ensemble is who it is, except... Well, Everyone.
So my question is what about everyone else that's on? Was it like first come, first serve? Are they all just like standing outside the room? Is there an overflow and they're watching like a video?
There's someone with the little like counter ticker going tick, 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 tick. You gotta go.
Fire capacity. Yeah. So sorry.
You gotta watch the meeting from the mess hall. Sorry.
And like O'Neill.
Put a velvet rope across.
And like, I don't know, O'Neill or Lucas or something like run in and they're like, what about him? Oh, someone saved him a spot. You can't save spots. It's first come, first serve.
I'm on the list. Sorry, I don't see your name. Eh, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So Hudson is giving a debrief about everything that, you know, has happened. Mm-hmm. And is very, you know, I don't know what's going to happen down there, but like, we can't let them succeed. They have enough power to like wipe shit out. This mm-hmm. ain't good.
And one of the first things we learn about Admiral Van Alden from Hudson is how he inspires such fierce loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
And the example is that his XO that went on this mission with him chose to follow him to the secret base beneath the sea rather than live with her 3-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so Hudson's like, here's what's going to happen. Gonna take crew. Ford, you're going to stay behind.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ford's job is that if they don't succeed on their mission, Ford has to blow stuff up.
Yep, yep. As soon as that 24-hour clock hits zero, he's flooding the tubes. He's blowing the shit to Kingdom Come.
Yep. That makes Henderson all like, wait, but there's like 100 people on this base. And he's like, and there's a lot more on this planet.
Yeah.
Like,
he doesn't even say it. He just responds with the question, and how many people are on Earth, Lieutenant?
Just like, silence.
Let's follow the logic. Yeah, yeah.
So he is taking Dagwood because he needs muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lucas is like, hey, I think I should go too because computers.
You're going to need a computer boy with these launch systems. And he thinks about it. And yeah, okay. It's the three of them. It's the new Paella boys.
New Paella boys.
Do you think the captain likes paella?
He's going to test it out. He's going to find out. He's heard a lot about it. He's a little jealous of the bonding.
I'm more of a gazpacho man myself, Mr. Walenchek.
But I will try this paella you speak of. So after he dismisses everyone, Freddy lingers behind.
Mm-hmm. She gets a scene. She not only gets a scene, it's outside of the sub fighter. This is very rare so far.
Yes. And she's like, hey, you should really tell Dagwood and Lucas, like, what's actually going on here and why you're doing this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Give them some idea of what they're in for with this guy.
Your history with this man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not that we get to learn what that is yet. No. But she's like, if they're going to possibly die, they should know why.
Mm-hmm. He does not take her up on this advice.
No.
No.
So they head out in the fancy launch, though.
Yes, yes. With the laser nose.
Yes. And over in Macronesia, the commander dude we saw before is checking in with, like, a more higher ranking.
Yes. This is General Stasi, who we saw in Brave New World. This is Bourne's, like, the commander of the Macronesian military.
Yes. If they said his name, I missed it.
They did in Brave New World, but it is the same guy.
It's just, I know in Brave New World he did. I meant here, though.
Yeah.
Because I'll say, it's just kind of a general old white dude.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, like, he doesn't really stand out to me. I'm always distracted also by, like, their peacekeeper outfits.
Yeah, the black and red look.
The black and red.
But his has all the medals and some embroidery and
doesn't
stuff.
Doesn't it have, like, yellow or something?
He's got some extra stuff
going
on.
It's a little
on.
Different this time.
Yeah.
It's to make him look more official.
Mm-hmm.
More in charge.
But yes, he, if we're going to, like, perhaps global thermonuclear war, we need the top military guy in this base. He's taking charge of the response.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, they don't trust that obviously fake story McGath fed them about a computer malfunction. That's bullshit.
Yeah, so they've been, like, you know, investigating. And, oh, look, there's the Sequest by the trench where the missiles came from. What the fuck?
So they make the obvious yet mistaken conclusion that Sequest was the platform that launched this attack in the first place. Whoops!
I'm kind of wrong. But they're like, well, we're going to return fire and go blow them up instead.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes sense. Meanwhile, on the Sequest, Ford is not handling his orders very well. He is very uptight right now.
Yeah, yeah.
He's checking in with everyone, and they're kind of like, dude, you just asked me like 2 minutes ago. There's nothing going on at my station.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Henderson has to have a little chat with him like, hey, you're making the crew nervous. You need to fucking chill out. He's like, I need a vacation. After this, I'm going on a vacation away from the ocean.
So they set themselves a ski trip date. They're going to go on vacation together to go ski.
Do either of them actually ski? Have they ever skied before?
They sure talk like they've skied before. They know a lot of lingo. They compare their favorite ski places. They have definitely skied.
Okay. Because I'm just like,
or they're both faking it really good.
What if they both are and they just don't want the other one to know? That they're like, oh no, he's a skier. And he's like, oh no, she's a skier. I have to pretend like I know what I'm talking about.
Well, then it's a story they'll be able to tell their grandchildren.
And they're going
to
go skiing and neither of them actually know. And they're going to fall on their tailbones like 20 times. And then they can't have sex because they're going to be in too much pain.
They'll find a way.
They're both going to be like, oh, it hurts. Not sexy.
Not sexy?
Not sexy.
Okay. But if they only fell on their tailbone 19 times,
it would still hurt.
Okay.
It would still hurt a lot. On the launch, they're chatting on their way. Lucas is speculating about what happened. Like, maybe it really did launch by accident. And, you know, because, like, no one wants a war.
Right.
And Hudson's like, someone does. Like, there's no way this was an accident. There is someone out there who wants a war.
Yeah, that lady who just died 700 times. She got so blown up.
And they come across the two UEO recon subs.
In many, many, many pieces.
Many pieces. Like, yep, that is them. And they get to... narrow trench that narrows so much for so long that they can't see what's past it.
Mm-hmm,
but they're like, okay, we're going in. Hudson's like, arm all the weapons. Mm-hmm. And Lucas is like, why? He's like, because we're going to be fucking fired upon. There's absolutely no way we're not. That is exactly what's on the opposite side of this trench.
So as everyone is just like sucking in to squeeze through this trench, we get some Hudson backstory. He used to serve under Admiral Van Alden back when he was Captain Van Alden.
Yes, and he taught him everything he knew.
But then one day, he disobeyed an order in the siege of such and such place. And was demoted on the spot and replaced as his XO by that lady with the three-year-old who's with him in the base now.
Yeah.
He knows all these people.
But then we don't get much more information at that point because, oh my god, there's so many fucking weapons on them.
There's this cloud of sentry drone subs.
Yes, and they are getting hit by a lot of things, but none of them at full power.
Yeah, they're just getting poked a lot.
Yes, nudged along, herded to an airlock.
And so Hudson's like, okay, well, let's just go where they're pushing us and see what happens. Let's go.
Yes.
And inside, they find an abandoned factory.
It's not really abandoned. There's a lot of people there.
But I mean, like, the set. This is clearly filmed in an abandoned industrial site.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so everyone's doing a lot of metal work for some reason. Like, we love sparks.
Yeah, yeah. The design of the set, I mean, it is a location, not a set, but the space they inhabit, I don't think fits the literal truth of the story they're telling.
Yeah.
Who would build a submersible weapons base to look like an abandoned factory with, like, crumbling concrete columns in big open space? That makes no sense.
Yeah.
It should look more like the Sequest.
Yeah. It should look at least brand new, like, finished concrete.
Yeah. But it is a space that tells the story. It fits the mood of what is happening in the society here in the base.
Yeah.
So I appreciate it all the same.
It looks very much like one of the, like, mining colony type sets they've used before.
It is set designed for the vibe of the story, not the facts of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Hudson leads them out and decides to just yell, like,
basically,
hey, I'm Oliver Hudson from the Sequest.
UEO, big UEO boy here. I'm here with orders.
Pamela.
Yes, that's her name.
Pamela walks out, makes a snide comment about how a boy, a freak, and a clown were sent here. Like, how nice of the UEO to send a circus.
Yeah, you see a lot of boys in the circus, a lot of circus boys in the stands, maybe.
I don't know. I don't know what circus she has been to. The future's weird, man.
That's
like,
true. That's true.
Child labor's definitely come back.
So yeah, she's swaggering on up, and all these people, they are not in regulation uniform.
Yeah,
they're in shredded and tattered bits and pieces of, like, the off-duty uniform, and, you know, your tank tops, and
they're all so sweaty and greasy.
They're all so sweaty.
They all must smell horrible.
Maybe things started going wrong when their, like, environmental regulation system broke down. This is the regulator. This is Act One of the regulator. They need to get a guy down here with a chip.
Seriously, because There's a scene later where she is so sweaty. Yes. The only thing that's not soaked with sweat on her shirt is like where her nipples would be. The sweat has just like engulfed her.
So yeah, there's this big audience, and is Captain Oliver Hudson intimidated? Fuck no, he's Oliver Hudson.
Hudson's like, yeah, I'm here to like relieve him of command. Like, you're all gonna drop your guns and you're gonna leave, yeah, and you're all fired.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, fuck no, we aren't. The UEO doesn't exist here.
That's the line that closes the act. The UEO doesn't exist here. While, yeah, people are like shoving assault rifles into Captain Hudson's gut, and he's like, hey, son, put that down. In fact, I need you to put that in our shuttle because, yeah, we're relieving you of duty.
Please hand that to the boy.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, no, we're not doing that.
He's just huge, like, big dick swagger coming off of Captain Hudson here when that's his response to the certain threat of death. It's a good Hudson moment.
So he gets punched a lot.
He gets punched a lot.
And has to, like, call Dagwood off because Dagwood like immediately wants to come to his rescue.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he and Lucas get carted away in one direction and Pamela takes Dagwood in a different one.
Curious.
Meanwhile, over on the Sequest.
Yes. O'Neill has detected some long-range missiles coming their way. And so Ford orders Brody to intercept and he's like, okay, push button. We're good.
Mm-hmm. And so they do that and send up their anti-aircraft missiles because, like, it's coming from above.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the target's down, but then they get hit,
yes,
by something else. And there's flooding in the hydroponics area, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Doesn't sound like that much of a problem.
It's kind of what it's for, yeah. Sure. All right.
Is
this the hydroponics area where Bridger took Dr. Smith on that kind of date,
mm-hmm,
that Piccolo interrupted?
Mm-hmm. Do you think, like, Hudson's made it off limits because he, like, knows of the history of the hydroponics lab?
Yeah. I mean,
no one's making out there.
It depends on how much he enjoys his like leafy greens, I guess.
That's true.
He seems like a man who would indulge in some kale.
I was going to say spinach.
Oh, he's a spinach man.
He's a big fan of Popeye.
Yeah, that's what got him in the Navy in the first,
yeah,
place. He loves Popeye.
Yeah. He has like a secret tattoo of the
Popeye anchor.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another bit of characterization that was meant for Bridger, but they never quite got it in, so they gave it to Hudson.
Yeah, but it's on his ass, so that's why we never see it.
I am what I am, Mr. Walenchek.
Come up with some weird ass comment he'd talk about with like Elaine about his anchor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah, those long range missiles flying through the sky were just a distraction to keep them from noticing the attack subs riding hidden in their wake.
And they are so fucked.
They are so fucked. And this is the second time when the second salvo comes, because their countermeasures are scrambled. They can't react, where we have a slow countdown to a massive, unavoidable impact. There's like,
yes,
8 torpedoes that hit at once.
Yes, and they get hit really bad. Stuff explodes. People go fucking flying across the bridge.
Ford flies across the bridge like he was launched from a catapult.
Yes.
He goes so far.
It makes complete sense that he ends up with a coma,
yeah,
after this.
Three
that body.
Three decks are breached at once. And so James Brody is nominally in command of the Sequest.
Mm-hmm.
Who's actually in command, calling out orders that people listen to and immediately like grabbing the yoke, is Lieutenant Lonnie Henderson.
Yes, because she's like, fuck this, we're not fighting.
We are leaving.
We are getting out of here.
And so she orders the deployment of the extra bonus engines we've never seen before.
And so they like fucking like light speed out of there,
yeah,
in a way that I did not know was possible for them.
I think this is a strange capability to have never been mentioned before, but I do like the look of like these panels opening up on the back and these water jets just sort of like fold out into them.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, all right, that's cool.
Like, it makes sense for them to have this ability. And like, it's not just like they can do it. She had to like revert power to it from other areas. Mm-hmm, so it's not like it's always available.
But I would have appreciated if at some point in the previous four episodes, they mentioned like,
Going in a dry
dock for some upgrades or something.
Yeah, because as far as we know, it is from the cornfield to here. Yeah. They have not actually ever dry docked this thing since they got back.
At least, yeah, nothing as substantial as, oh yes, you have bonus extra engines for sometimes.
So, back at the base.
In the holding cell.
Yes, Lucas and Hudson have been put in this makeshift holding cell. And Lucas is, you know, wondering, like, where do you think they took Dagwood? And Hudson's just talking about shirts.
Yeah. So what we learn here is that Admiral Van Alden was some sort of super Hudson.
Yes.
Even more of a stickler, like full dress inspection twice a week. And one time when he opened Hudson's footlocker, he saw a shirt improperly folded. And so Hudson had 2 months of laundry duty. He learned to fold a shirt the right way, goddammit.
Lucas is like, okay, so what order did you disobey?
can we get to some more relevant backstory, please?
And Hudson's like, oh, that's not relevant. It might be. This guy sounds fucking nuts.
But yeah, it just goes to show how far he's fallen, what has changed. He's got like, these guys are like 25% of the way to being a Mad Max cult from the way they dress. And there's how could these possibly be Van Alden's men?
How could this man who was so mad about a shirt allow this place to be covered in so much grease and sweat?
Yes. And no one has intact clothes, let alone properly laundered.
No one is showering or has like regulation haircuts.
It's so smelly. Yeah, we see a dude with, like, beard tassels. There's no way that's Navy rags.
A guy with, like, full-body tattoos, like, up his neck and face. There's no way that's allowed in the UEO.
Or else Crocker would have had them.
He would have just been fully covered with, like, semen tattoos. Like, ropes and mermaids and anchors and
every kind of knot you could ever tie is on that man somewhere.
Oh my god, he'd just be a chart. And then, when, like, Westphalen is, like, berating them for not knowing their knots, Crocker would be like, it's fine, and snap open his shirt. I'm a diagram. And just be like his, like, we have to shave my chest hair away. But yeah, if you look closely.
But then we can put the chest hair in the spinning wheel and get the rope we need.
Oh, that's what he does in his free time. He braids his own rope from his chest hair. This makes so much sense.
Does it?
Yes, it does.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to the things that actually happened in the television program.
Lucas busts open his shirt and is like, hey!
I have one chest hair.
I was going to say knots. I got my first tattoo. It kind of hurt, though, so I haven't gotten the rest yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotta go back for the others. So, the order that Hudson disobeyed.
Yes.
We
learn some more background about this particular siege, who was sieging who, what the situation was. And this took place pretty soon after the disappearance of Sequest.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like the UEO started to crumble and Macronesia started becoming ascendant pretty soon after the space war began.
Yes. Well, they did say, like, once the Sequest was gone, it was like, oh, shit. And so Hudson's like, hey, how much do you know about these events? And he's like, oh, I know a little. So, like, well, let me explain it to you. So there was this colony that was declared a UEO safe haven, and Macronesia took it.
Yeah.
And
very Nexus colony-ish. Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
It seems a little bit like history was repeating there. Yeah.
And on like the 50th or 48th day after it was taken, the sub tried to break out.
Because the UEO, including the ship that Van Alden was commanding and Hudson was serving as executive officer on, were like holding this siege, trying to starve out the invaders to reclaim it for the UEO.
Yes. And so the sub broke out and it wasn't radioing at all. It wasn't answering them. And so he was ordered to fire upon it. But Hudson's like, but they're like heading straight for us. They're not like firing up their weapons. They're not doing like anything an attack would do.
Yeah.
So he refused to fire.
Which branded him a coward in the Admiral's eyes from that day forward on forever.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is a super mega Hudson.
Yes.
Yes. And he was demoted on the spot. Pamela something was promoted, was given his job. But in the moments it took to do that, they did get hear a radio broadcast. They were refugees all along.
Mm-hmm. They hid for like 7 weeks waiting like to be able to escape.
Inside the pipes. And yeah.
Yes. And Lucas is like, oh, so you were right. And he's like, doesn't matter if I was right or wrong. Like,
he disobeyed an order.
Seen as a coward. And he's, you know, that's what I was in his eyes. And Lucas is like, well, what about in your eyes? Why don't you tell me about what science you're doing over here? We're not going to get into the touchy-feely feelings.
Yeah, yeah. There's a reason I don't have a psychic psychologist on my boat. We don't do that here.
We don't do that.
We don't talk about feelings.
Feelings. So Lucas is like, oh, yeah, so trying to reconfigure this unit over here, the core power. He's like, if I can reconfigure it, we can cut off the power to the missiles and etc. So trying to do that. But then before he can do more, some guards start coming. So he hides away his stuff and the guards come and they take Hudson and leave with him. And so we gotta go check in on the Sequest.
Yes. In the med bay, in the poorly lit, because they've been attacked and they're not doing too hot, med bay of Sequest, Commander Ford lies comatose and concussed.
Yeah, things didn't go great.
No, he got flung so far and so hard.
Seriously, that was like the best catapulted like body dummy. It was great.
I think you can kind of see the corners of the airbag or like mattress pads that they launched the stuntman onto, like popping up into the bottom of frame.
Maybe.
But I'm glad they had that many. That looked so dangerous.
Flying. yeah. So Ford has a coma. Brody comes in. Henderson fills him in. That Ford has a coma, and Brody is then like,
hey,
okay.
What the fuck, though?
Yeah, like, what the fuck did you do? I'm in charge here. I'm in command. And she's like, no one was in command. Chain of command! I'm in command!
His, like, sort of petulant little boy delivery of the response to, no one was in command of, I was, and I am. Like, okay.
The thing is like, he's not wrong.
No, absolutely
but
not.
But also,
he's legally right, 100%.
It's the tone of it. But Henderson's just like wrapped up in the fact, she's like, but your command goes against our orders.
Yes.
Yours goes against the mission. We had to get out because we have to be there to destroy the base.
But Brody's plan is, well, number one, Sequest never runs from a fight. Sequest always wins. That's what we do. It's our pride, our reputation. So therefore, we're going to go right back to where these guys fought us. We're going to kick their asses.
Mm-hmm. Revenge.
It is time to hunt their hunters.
He goes back to the bridge. He tells O'Neill to look for Alliance subs, take us back where we were, tells Freddy to get a Spectre ready. They're going.
Because he's got a plan to, like, find a place to, like, lie in ambush for Freddy to draw them out and then, like, see how you like an ambush. Fuck you up.
Mm-hmm. And again, Henderson's like, but the mission.
But the mission.
In command.
We have a mission directly from the Secretary General of the UEO.
So back at the base, Hudson goes to see the Admiral.
these Van Alden boys are filthy. They're such filthy boys.
Oh, all his guards? Yes. They're so gross. So gross. So as, like, Hudson's, like, thrown into the room to go meet the Admiral, mm-hmm. we don't see the Admiral, but we hear his voice for a while. And he's like, have you come to kill me, Oliver?
Yeah. And his response is, no, I've come with orders to relieve you. And he's like, semantics. Okay. That's where we're at. Okay.
Goodness.
So Admiral Van Alden here is played by Bernie Casey, who in the 90s was doing a lot of stuff like this. He's in at least two of the Star Treks. He did a Babylon 5 appearance. He's doing the circuit. But back in the 60s, he was an NFL wide receiver. Mm. In the 70s, a star of the blaxploitation scene. And the 80s saw him breaking out into mainstream films. Like, he played Felix Leiter in Never Say Never Again, opposite Sean Connery. He was the vice principal in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Mm. He was UN Jefferson in all of the Revenge of the Nerds films.
I've not seen any of them.
That's okay. But you would see some familiar faces. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, here he is doing the 90s genre TV circuit on Sequest.
The Admiral here. Weird fucking dude.
Yeah?
Yeah, he starts talking about how, you know, being on Doomsday Watch really makes you begin to understand man's nature.
And he's got some thoughts about man's nature. The natural state of being, which must be embraced and not resisted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such as killing each other.
Yeah.
Fuck peace.
We are built for war. Peace is a lie. Peace is an illusion. Actually, the word he uses is sickness. Peace is a sickness. And he tells the story of how, we came down here, and after a while, there were some real, like, breaks in discipline. And then I realized, wait a minute, these people are right. I'm wrong for trying to maintain order in a lawless universe. This is how we're supposed to be. And Hudson's like, yeah, this is a classic case of isolation dementia. You're all fucked.
Yeah. And then, like, he says something about, like, oh, that's what killed everyone on the Jupiter orbital?
The Jupiter probe.
Yeah.
They launched a probe to Jupiter and it went bad.
Everyone died. Because
they got so paranoid, they fucked up. What one of the thousand things you have to not fuck up if you want to survive going to Jupiter, I guess.
Yeah, didn't go well.
Yeah.
So then the Admiral's like, hey, look at this feed of us torturing Dagwood.
Yeah, they've got like CCTV down to the fight pit where Dagwood is getting whipped with a laser whip by this large bearded man.
And he's like, I'm trying to set him free.
Yeah.
Set his nature free, because fuck peace.
So while he's, again, hammering on this philosophical, ideological point, and Dagwood is being more literally hammered on, we see in parallel, Dagwood starts fighting back. He tackles his whip man and starts just whooping ass, while Hudson pulls a giant knife out of a belt sheath that on Van Alden's waist and puts it to Van Alden's neck.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that he has won the ideological battle, bringing out this beast in the both of them simultaneously, he just sort of pokes Hudson with a little stun stick, a little glowy rod.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got like a little personal taser, I guess?
Yeah.
And knocks him out.
Mm-hmm.
And
because, it just took one little push for your gentle giant to become this savage beat man. And for you, Mr. Straight-Laced Military Discipline, to just start trying to assassinate dudes?
This is a dude that needs to be assassinated. Like, no questions asked.
Mm-hmm,
I'm not actually concerned about that at all.
But there's a theme. There's a theme running through. The episode is called Chain of Command. Oh, hey, let's check in with Brody.
Yeah. Well, so Freddy's out there with her specter, getting to her coordinates. Henderson is trying to talk Brody down, like, it's not too late. We got 5 hours till we need to blow that place up if they're not out. And it's going to take us an hour to get in place. Like, we,
yeah,
it's not too late to turn this around.
Well, what if they use the super mega double engines again?
And now other crew is starting to also be like, Brody, like, think about this. O'Neill's like, you know, she's got a good point.
O'Neill is very swayed by just the clock math argument that Henderson brings up. He's like, yeah, that makes sense, actually.
So back on the base, Hudson is now tied up on the floor by the Admiral. And the Admiral's like, so you don't approve of men fighting to their death, Oliver? It's like, not really, no.
And he is trying to get across the point that peace is part of our better nature. That is what makes us really human, is the struggle for it and the pursuit, not rejecting it and going into these baser instincts. At this point, I realize Admiral Van Alden is just the villain of Metal Gear Rising.
Oh.
Yes. He's just Senator Armstrong.
Okay.
Who was also a football player, like the actor portraying General Van Alden. Although he had magic nanomachine skin that made him nearly indestructible.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, if he could, he would too.
He would, yeah. I would love to see a cyborg ninja running around on Sequest. That'd be great.
So the Admiral spews a lot of crazy bullshit, like, you know, fighting to the death is just basic training as it should be done.
Yes! Yes!
We could all use a good war.
And
of course, the UEO is imposing its lie of peace on humanity.
And so
fuck them.
And so, yeah, there's the big Senator Armstrong connection, just a belief in the savage state of nature that going to, like, yeah, being ruled by a dog-eat-dog violent anarchy will really let the strong survive, cull the weak. That's just the way the world ought to be run. And the way to achieve that is, yeah, launch the nukes at everybody so that we just see what happens. An end of all nations. A start of a perpetual forever war for every individual.
Want to live in that world? Yeah. So Lucas is doing more stuff with the wires in his cell as Dagwood gets shoved back in.
Oh boy, this is one of those rare episodes where Peter DeLuise is given a scene to really act. Because the big man has some big confused feelings.
Yes. He is very riled up. Clawing at the gate, trying to get to the guards. And voices the point that he almost killed a man and a part of him liked it.
And he's so upset. He's so confused. All of these big feelings at the same time. And he has no, like, strategy to deal with them. He needs a Dr. Smith in this moment, actually.
Yes.
But yeah, she's fired. She got killed by aliens.
Yeah, so Lucas is just there to be like, well, part of you didn't like it. So that's
the part that makes you human.
Hang on to that.
Yeah. And we don't talk about, okay, what does it mean to be human to Dagwood the Gelf, who's in this other situation? It's not that episode.
No,
it's just the big, simple man has big, powerful feelings. We're not worried about the other stuff.
And so we're going to try to distract him with the project we have at hand, which is stopping the missiles. And so Lucas explains, you know, this is our only chance, so we gotta find, like, some energy-conducting alloy so we can put it in there, but we gotta be careful so we don't, like, electrocute ourselves, as Dagwood rips a big metal bar off of a thing and shoves it in and electrocutes himself and passes out.
He cuts the Gordian lights at the cost of his own safety. Yeah, a lot of our cast is currently unconscious.
Yes.
So
back on the Sequest, Freddy is in position. Brody is telling her to fire when ready, or that they're going to fire when ready, like, get the attention of these enemies. And Henderson is, of course, back there, and she's like, but what
don't
if
don't do
we,
that though
what if we lose this fight, what if we're destroyed, we can't do our mission, we can't blow up the base, everyone will die.
Yeah, they're trying to prevent global nuclear war.
It's the whole thing of there's 100 people on that base. There's, yeah, a couple hundred of us here, but there's the rest of the planet.
And what does the chain of command say on the boat? What does the chain of command say about the mission, though? Brody?
And Tony now is like, you know, she's got a point, because, like, if we get one bad hit, we're done for, and we cannot go blow up the base.
Yeah, and, like, we will probably win this fight. There's every chance that winning the fight will still render us incapable of doing the mission.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, Tony. Oh, our boy Tony.
So, Brody, in his vengeance quest, tries to make it a question of courage.
Yes.
And this is when Tony Piccolo reveals that he has done the reading.
Yes. He read the book.
He just strikes down his superior officer's argument by saying that that vengeance is selfish. It is not courageous. Quote, courage is the temporary absence of selfishness. Stephen Crane wrote that. And this is something that would only happen, at least on Sequest, in 2032. This is the setup payoff of a 4-week running plot.
It would never happen in the other seasons.
Absolutely not.
We don't believe in callbacks.
The closest we got to a running plot in season 2, I think, was, or you know, both seasons combined, was Henderson sees O'Neill's bright red underwear, then they go on a date a couple of weeks later.
Yeah. And, like, anything else was just always, like, Lucas has daddy problems, and again. Bridger lost his son.
Again.
Right? Yeah, it's like that. Like, we're never...
It doesn't develop. It doesn't shift and change the way we've gone from, I'm self-critically calling myself an idiot. I need help. It turns out I might have undiagnosed dyslexia, so now I have magic glasses. I'm quoting classic literature on the bridge to save the day.
Yes.
Look, that is an arc. We never had an arc before.
No. And so that makes Brody pause, and O'Neill takes it as his moment to be like, you know, they could pass over us and not know we're here.
Mm-hmm.
And Brody's like, what is this, mutiny? And they're like, no, it's a plea for reason. Like,
this is, of course, Henderson's line. Like, yeah, we'll follow your orders. We're just really hoping you give different ones. We're counseling you, please.
We really think these are bad ones. Pretend we're Ford right now.
Yeah.
And so Brody stops, and he thinks, and he tells Freddy to lose them.
Mm-hmm. And her response, because Freddy is cool as hell, is, quote, I can lose my own shadow.
Yeah.
She gets two big moments. It's that, like, kick-ass action cool line, and actually being like, hey, Captain Hudson, I'm the one person here who knows you as a human being.
And you should tell your secrets.
You should tell your secrets.
Secrets aren't good. You shouldn't keep secrets. So, back on the base, Lucas and Dagwood have been brought to the area where Hudson is tied up. Because, you know, it's been discovered that they disabled the power grid, and it was them. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, is the missiles are on an independent power grid, so it didn't actually, like, do anything.
Which makes perfect sense if you're building the apocalypse bunker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, that's what you would do. Lucas probably should have thought of that.
He didn't have the schematics.
That's true.
You know,
that's
it was a 50-50 chance.
Maybe
that it was
he should have asked for the schematics before they went on the launch so he could prepare his strategies.
50-50 chance. Like, this might have them on it. It might not. I can't access anything else, so we're just going to give it a go.
Sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, they did essentially nothing.
Yeah.
They just made their captors kind of frustrated.
And so they're like, yeah, we're going to go blow shit up. That's what we're going
to
do.
Yeah. Thanks to that, we're putting Sequest on the list of targets, along with
Honolulu
and New Sydney. And yeah.
Yeah. So then Hudson says something about Christmas. I didn't write it down. But it was something about Christmas. It was like a little...
Oh, yeah, something about how... Like,
Pamela's daughter won't have Christmas.
Christmas is canceled for her daughter, or something along those lines, yeah.
Yeah, like a very snide remark.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then Hudson's like, well, it's really easy to just, like, push the button to kill everyone and send others off to die for you, but I don't see you doing any fighting, Admiral. So, why don't we go take it to the ring?
Yeah, he challenges Admiral Van Alden to the fight pit. To like beat each other's ideas into one another, and he says, "Well, a proper commander sends their best warrior forward." So he actually has to fight Pamela in the ring.
Yes.
Why this doesn't mean he can get to send Dagwood, I don't know, but it's fine.
Well, Dagwood isn't his best warrior.
Lucas is. That's right. He'll do something sneaky to her.
So, in the ring,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Pamela's got a fancy little pipe.
They both have these big beating pipes that are way too thick.
They are so thick. They look like light poles.
This fight would be 10 times better if these beating sticks were half the diameter, so you could properly grip them.
Especially because, like, it... looks like they're trying to imply that these are things that they normally use for fighting and not like a found object. Where I'm like, no, that looks like a light pole.
Yeah.
That does not look like the stick I'm going to use to fight each other.
These are too long and too thick to the point that it makes me wonder if like someone misread the like units on a sketch for the prop department. It's very strange. And I know I'm right that the fight would be a lot better if these were different, because eventually over the course of the fight, they get cast aside and they're just going like feet and fists, and it's way better.
It's so much better.
But before they get in the fight, before the fight properly begins, Lucas and Hudson are having a small chat on the way in, and Lucas is like, what the fuck are you doing? What is the point of this?
He's like, the entire time he's watching this fight, he's not pushing buttons. Mm-hmm, we need time.
It's all to buy time.
It's up to the Sequest now. We need them to blow us up before we blow shit up. And Lucas is like, oh.
As soon as Lucas's power plan was revealed to be a failure, or hell, as soon as they got captured, I think Hudson knows he's not coming out of this. It's Ford's job to finish the mission. Yeah.
Well, and I kind of wonder, too, like, did Hudson know earlier on, right? Mm. Like, Lucas is talking about working this thing, and he's like, yeah, we're... do that. Like, yeah. Did he know that's not gonna do anything? Mm-hmm. But I'm not gonna tell you not to, because you need the hope that it can. But it gives the boy
something to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. While we wait for that clock to tick down.
Yeah, it might create a distraction if something happens with it, etc.
I think Hudson knew the three of them were not coming out of this alive as soon as he knew Van Alden was alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that he was still alive down there and mm-hmm, not, mm-hmm. like... okay, maybe they killed him and Pamela took over or something.
Or yeah, something flooded and they're all fucking dead and it really was a computer issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But as soon as he saw the situation, I think he knew that, like, okay, we just got to keep him from pushing the button and then have Ford kill us.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they're in the fight. They're fighting. And like every good bit of stage combat, they're having a conversation.
Yes, they are. And of course, Hudson is playing dirty and just keeps bringing up her daughter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, oh, is this the world you want your daughter to grow up in, etc. Mm-hmm, throwing her off.
I mean, assuming she can grow up because of all the nuclear hellfire.
Yeah, but like,
if this is what you want society to be like, if this is the honest truth.
Do you want your daughter to fight to the death?
Really? The fight pit world? You want that?
And she's like, man. Not. That's actually kind of bad.
Is this when you noted she was so incredibly sweaty? Because Hudson is so incredibly sweaty as well, both of them at the same time.
Yeah, like, they're both so sweaty. No, it's later, like, her scene after this is when I noticed, like, mm-hmm. I knew she was sweaty, but it's when I was like, well, that's odd. Yeah, they're fighting with their tubes. They're you know, whacking each other. He ends up, like, getting control of both tubes and, like, throws them to the side, like, that's enough. And she's like, fuck no, I'm gonna start kneeing you in the stomach again and again. Fuck you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so they grapple and fight and punch each other a lot.
He's got about 15 years on her, you'd mm-hmm. say. Like, she's got an advantage in the fisticuffs.
And so he, like, throws her and then, like, ends up, like, grabbing her arm and kind of locking her in place and says, like, you're frightened, aren't you? Good. It means you value life and there's hope for you still.
But there's no, they don't fight to submission in the fight pit. In fact, Captain Hudson might have won the battle, but he doesn't get anything out of it.
No. Well, and he also kind of, like, he keeps, like, throwing it, like, the fight. Like, he keeps... He gets the weapons, so he throws them aside and is like, that's it.
Yeah.
And then, like, fight hand to hand, and he has her, and he's like, that's it. We're not, like, stooping to your level. We're done with this.
Yeah, yeah. He wins the fight and then quits, whereas these people, this Van Alden society, is constant forever battle.
Yes.
They will never say the end.
Mm-hmm. And so the Admiral's like, fine, execute them.
Mm-hmm. So our three sequesties are being led down a dank, dark hallway in this facility. And you might have forgotten, Dagwood very strong.
Yes.
Dagwood's so strong.
He shows Lucas that he has broken from his hand restraints. And so Lucas is like, great! And turns and punches his guard, which is the cue for everyone else to start punching each other.
Dagwood is just tearing apart three dudes at once. Hudson is still beating ass, and Lucas is surviving.
Hey, he is doing pretty darn good until a guy pulls a gun on him.
Yeah,
and then he's like, "Fuck."
And no one is within arm's reach to save Lucas. But then the man is shot. Oh no! It's the lady,
Pamela.
Pamela came to save them.
Yes. And she's like, so you guys should get the fuck out of here. And Hudson's like, well, we can't. Like, we came to, disarm the missiles. We have to do that. And she's like, I already did it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, get out of here before I change my mind and shoot you.
All the daughter stuff in their combat scene got through to her.
Mm-hmm. They leave.
Mm-hmm.
As back on the Sequest, Brody is having a crisis because it is time to blow up the base. And they have to. And Henderson is, like, starting to freak out. She's like, no, they're still there. Like, give them 30 more minutes. Like, we can't. And Brody's like, no, you showed me I have to follow orders. We can't not do this.
Mm-hmm,
it's like,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to, but we have to.
This is the same mistake that he was stopping her, that she was stopping him from making 8 hours ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Tony hits the fucking button. He fires those torpedoes to kill his friends. He's going to be the lone paella boy.
And so back on the base, Pamela is walking into, like, their bridge, mm-hmm. hearing that the missiles are heading their way and the Admiral is there. She's like, you know, I let Hudson go. And he's like, oh, the two of you can never make hard choices.
Yeah, yeah. She's immediately just as much a failure in his eyes as Hudson was for not firing on those refugees. Speaking of those refugees, the Admiral is... The reason he's so sure that he knows the ways of the world is they died anyway 2 days later in a missile strike on the camp they wound up in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just got this whole, like... So what was even the point?
Right, right.
Kind of thing.
What is the point of protecting life?
Mm-hmm.
If they deserve to live, they should have shot their way out. Yeah, yeah. Maybe then they'd be real human beings. There's even a line that Pamela has in the fight that, like, this fight started in Eden. They're very invested in this being the natural forever state of the human condition.
Yeah.
Constant battle to the death. They're fucked up. Things got fucked up here.
They are so fucked up. And when she asks him, like, hey, would you have, like, launched the first strike? And he's like, But perhaps this is what I wanted all along.
Yes.
Is to die.
Mm-hmm.
By being blown up. Which is fucked up, dude. Like, if you really wanted that so bad, you could have just done it to yourself. You didn't have to do all this.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, while he's sitting for, I suppose it's actually three times in this episode, people are just waiting for that clock to tick. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do but wait till to die. We go back to the Sequest, where there are tears being shed on the bridge.
Yes.
O'Neill is calling out that he hears no escape pods, no lifeboats.
But then... He does hear one UEO assault craft requesting permission to board.
And yeah, there's a huge cheers. Everyone's so excited. At least one of their friends survived. Or maybe one of their enemies hijacked the boat. They're really making assumptions that happen to be true. Congratulations.
I'm just over here like, if Ortiz was here, they would have heard that boat sooner. Just gonna say.
One UEO assault craft, it's speaking French. That's where my skills lie.
So, McGath is on the vid screen, not going to come back to, like, you know, welcome Hudson home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And is like, okay, cool, glad you're alive. What happened down there?
And so the story is that, yeah, there was a computer malfunction. And there were a lot of cases of isolation dementia that were not allowing them to, like, resolve the problem themselves.
It's all in my report.
Yeah. And, like, because McGath knows that's a fucking lie. He's covering for his old mentor.
Like, really? You're really going to do this after all of everything he did?
I mean, like, nothing he said was a lie. I'm sure their computers were kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
At the stage, by the time they got there. But it is a version of the truth that is built around, like, protecting the legacy of Van Alden for, like, future history.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a sign of respect for the guy that made him, in a way.
Mm-hmm. So, we find out Ford is out of his coma.
Yay!
He's not dead.
Yay!
He's good.
And he's hanging out with Lonnie.
Hudson's like, hey, Brody, what happened? Anything go wrong? And he's like, oh, no, everything was fine. We all understand the chain of command. It was all okay, right, guys? And everyone's like, yeah, it was fine.
So, like, Hudson's no fool. He knows that this cannot 100% be the truth. But he's going to let it slide because, you know, all's well that ends well. Brody seems like a guy that learned an important lesson today.
Okay.
And he rewards him by, like, letting him stay in the big chair and take the helm as they roll out to their next mission.
Mm-hmm. Like, sure. You know what? We're all letting things slide today.
I think this had to be a Brody episode because Ford would never have made that mistake. Even pre-Bridger Ford, pre-series Ford, would never have been like, you know what? Fuck them. Here we go.
Like, and it wouldn't, honestly, it wouldn't work for anyone else either. It had to be Brody.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you'd have to get pretty deep in the chain of command for it to be like a Piccolo plot.
But Piccolo wouldn't.
No, not anymore.
No.
Like, I think if he were to break orders, it wouldn't be for vengeance. It'd be like, let's leave. or like, let's go to the station ourselves and, like, go get them early or something.
Yeah, like, they need reinforcements. Yeah. We should send another shuttle.
And he'd risk really fucking it up that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Brody's the only one that I feel like would do revenge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so can't be Ford. You gotta knock him into a coma.
Crocker, maybe, but who knows where he wound up in the 10-year time skip?
Getting more tattoos. So Lucas goes to check on Dagwood, see how he's doing. And Dagwood is still, you know, grappling with the fact that he almost became a killer.
I like his line about, I don't know, I just really like ways that show that Dagwood has a lot of very complicated thoughts, but does not have a complicated vocabulary. Mm-hmm. And I like the way that it comes out in lines like, I feel, long pause, sick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, that's, I get you, bud. Like,
yeah, like yeah. That's how you would describe it, mm-hmm, if you didn't mm-hmm. know what else to say. And so Lucas, you know, is like, well, then you are okay.
Yeah.
Because if you feel sick about that,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you're okay.
Dagwood is already doing a bit better than Lucas thinks, because he does have a strategy. He mm-hmm. does have a point of view, a thing to hold a more positive and, like, functional point of view, which is his roach.
Yes.
Yes.
He's saving a life. Mm-hmm. He's still taking care of his little roach in his little jar with a slice of lettuce. Yes. And he's going to release him the next time they're on shore leave.
He got that lettuce when he had to mop out the hydroponic lab.
It's very soggy.
Well, that's what hydroponics like. That's fine. It's normal. I think this episode has gender things happening.
Yeah.
Like, the way to de-brainwash someone is to appeal to their motherhood.
Oh, yeah.
Their motherhood of a daughter, in particular.
I hate that that's, like, the only tactic he tries with her.
Mm-hmm.
I think it
with anyone. Like, he doesn't really try to change Van Alden's mind other than, this is bullshit. No, it's not. Well, I'm on a lot of ideas.
He knows that dude's fucking crazy.
Yeah, Van Alden is even more Hudson than Hudson. That's kind of the idea, sure.
But yeah, it would have been nice to have seen other tactics with her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or, hey, maybe the big guy with the beard gets a speaking role, and you try something with someone who's not a woman.
And then he punches him, and it's fine.
Or on Sequest, I mean, I don't want to just keep calling Brody a misogynist, but it lines up that he listens to O'Neill and Piccolo a lot more readily than he listens to Henderson.
Yeah.
and that the appeal to, I mean, part of it is there's only one woman on the show because Freddie is barely in this show. And that is a problem I have. I don't think Freddie is given the opportunity to be to fulfill the potential that she might have on the page.
Yeah. Well, and that's actually, I wish they would have done something with Freddie dealing with his orders. Like, yeah. Dealing with this. Because she's one, too, where, like, I think you could easily automatically go to the fact, well, she would also do revenge. But no, she wouldn't because she follows orders.
Mm-hmm.
She would stick too hard to the orders. So I feel like she should have, like, there should have been some conflict here or some conversation of, like, could it be Henderson trying to appeal to Freddie of, like, can you try talking to him? And she's I disagree, too. I don't think we should do this, but he is also in command.
Right.
And so, like, it's that whole, like, I could see her having a conversation of, I agree about the mission, but he's giving orders now.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, negates what the mission was, because now this is our mission because he's the commanding officer.
I think the big lost potential with Freddy in this episode is if Van Alden created Hudson, made him who he is, Hudson is doing the same for Freddy. Freddy is his friend, his protege, in the same way that he was for Van Alden years ago. What does that mean for her? How does she experience this mission?
Yeah.
Van Alden is her Navy grandpa, in a sense. I don't know if they ever knew each other, but she knows these stories.
I do also think, like, this whole thing is just weird with the timeline, because this only took place, like, 9 years ago.
Yeah.
Which doesn't seem long enough. Like, the whole, like, war starting, that's not the thing. It's the whole, like, being the protege of him, the under his wing, like,
yeah,
Hudson's too old for this to have only taken place 9 years ago.
And also, in those 9 years, he was not yet a captain, gets demoted for his insubordination, then gets promoted up to captain, becomes a superstar captain, who then claims the Sequest, but then still has multiple years to just serve on a freighter putting around rather than another position.
Mm-hmm. I would have much preferred if they would have done this as something that happened pre-Sequest leaving, and it was when he was younger, and it has nothing to do with, like, Macronesia.
Right. You could even squeeze it in, like, the same kind of saber-rattling, doesn't-go-anywhere mission that was the cold open of the premiere.
Yeah.
Pre-Bridger Sequest.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also, I think the other way gender happens in this episode is, like, the chain of command, the structure of the military, is presented as the counterpoint to, they call it human, but it sure comes off as the masculine urge to constantly be doing war.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, the only one that isn't on, the ones who are most not on board with their respective commanders going that way is Pamela and Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
The chain of command protects us from being the worst ways that a man can be.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how many times they say humanity, I look at the character dynamics of who's doing what and who's not, and it looks like a masculine-feminine thing to me.
Mm-hmm. This is an interesting one because it's like, you know, Hudson backstory.
Yes.
Which you're like, ooh, backstory.
Yeah.
But it's also like, not much happens. Like, really big things are at risk, but not much happens. It's a lot of like, we're captured. We're getting beat up. We're captured again. We're getting beat up. You know? So, like,
Anderson and Brody are arguing again.
They're arguing again, right? Like, it's just a lot of repetitiveness. I don't see it as like a bad episode. It's just not like, I think it's kind of a forgetful episode of season 3.
Yeah, yeah. But
like, I remember this episode.
When we were about to start on this one, I was saying to myself, I think I said it out loud.
Mm-hmm, you said it out loud. Yeah. You're like, I don't really remember what happens in this one.
Exactly. And when one of those comes up, it's usually because it's pretty middle of the road.
Yeah.
And I think that is the case this time. This is a middle of the road, not terribly exceptional in either direction, 2032 episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think part of it's just that not much really happens. Granted, yes, the whole world's at risk of being, like, annihilated.
Yeah, but it's no super train. Come on.
Yeah. So, darling, do you have a fish fact for us?
I have a Hudson fact.
Oh, yeah, Hudson fact.
So, the backstory that we learn, Hudson's insubordination, I wanted to see what exactly that would mean in the particulars, in the details, from a legal sense, perhaps. So it sounds to me like Hudson would have violated Article 90 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
Yeah.
Or the UEO equivalent, but let's just go with what actually exists in reality.
Mm-hmm.
This article is titled Assaulting or Willfully Disobeying Superior Commissioned Officer.
Okay.
In fact, a lot of the examples, like, it is assumed that most insubordination, at least from how these articles are written, is punching a guy that is higher ranked than you.
Oh.
I don't know if that's the most common way it happens, but it sure seems that way. But yeah, violating this article in wartime can carry the penalty of death.
Jesus.
Outside of wartime, we're talking about confinement of up to 5 years, forfeiture of all pay, and of course, a dishonorable discharge and everything that goes along with that. Hudson likely argued for the mitigating circumstances of both ethical concerns and imminent danger. Imminent danger that covers not only to yourself or other members of the military, but also civilians. If this had reached a court-martial, we learn from one of his backstory sessions that once they heard, like, the demotion is all that happened formally, he avoided a court-martial. But if he had, I think his lawyer would have argued for illegal orders as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is illegal to fire on fleeing refugees.
Yeah.
The prosecution would have been like, well, they didn't know that at the time, blah, blah, blah. That's, you know, that's how court goes. You make your arguments. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Darling, do you have a fish fact?
I do.
Tell me about this fish.
So, the roach.
That's not a fish.
Yes, it is. It is also known as the common roach, is a fresh and brackish water fish native to most of Europe and Western Asia.
Oh.
The common roach is very adaptable. And can be found in any freshwater ecosystem, ranging from small ponds to large rivers and lakes.
Do you think the episode had a cockroach because of the whole, like, they'll survive a nuclear apocalypse thing? Do you think that's why it wasn't, like, a cricket or something?
Yeah. Well, you know what? The roach name for this fish is very, it's fitting. Because it tolerates organic pollution and is one of the last species to disappear in polluted waters. Sticks around.
Yum, yum, yum. Give me the gross.
Yeah. So there you go.
There you go.
Roach
fish. The common roach. The common roach, which is uncommonly resilient.
Yes.
Yeah. Most weeks, that would be the end.
Yeah.
This isn't most weeks. It is time to return to the Movie Star Minute.
It is.
This week in the Movie Star Minute, we are seeing Mr. Michael Ironside's big budget U.S. debut.
Yep.
In Top Gun from 1986.
Yes.
Featuring our beloved Michael Ironside as Jester, callsign Jester, the first instructor we see at the titular school for fighter pilots, Top Gun Academy.
Uh-huh.
Darlin, what is his functional role? Or describe the character of Jester.
He's a hard-ass teacher.
Yes, he is.
Barely in this fucking movie.
I mean, again, stopwatch-wise, you're correct. He might be in it more than Overdog McNabb was in that movie.
I don't know. I kind of feel like Overdog was in it more.
But I think he is integral to the film Top Gun. I think he you could not have this movie without Jester. And
I guess.
Because his purpose... He is the voice of the military. He is the voice of the academy. He gives the lessons. He
wears a little hat.
He wears his little hat, his very tall hat. It's very Sequest Season 1 and 2 style hats in Top Gun.
Well, he's got the little, not the baseball hat, but the little
hat. Yes, the little, like, yeah. But
the little flat hat.
Yes.
That becomes not flat. I don't know what those are called.
But because we have a character filling the official role, he's like a talking manual. That allows, like, the other teachers to not have to be that, to be...
They have emotions.
Yeah, to have emotions, to be three-dimensional people. That lets Viper be the guy that knows Maverick's dad.
Mm-hmm.
That lets Charlie be the guy that smooches Maverick.
Mm-hmm.
In order to go off, you need the walking, talking manual in Jester.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's pivotal. I think he's a load-bearing character.
Sure. I can agree with this. I can see this.
But if you were to watch the films of Michael Ironside, would you include Top Gun?
No!
No.
When you included this one, I thought he was going to be in it a hell of a lot more.
I think it is...
Especially for, like, I don't know, how people were showing up at C2E2 in Top Gun, like, outfits to get his autograph. And I'm like, this dude's in this movie for, like, 5 minutes. What the hell?
I mean, I think he gives a really strong performance in this very functional role.
He does. There's nothing against him in the role.
Yeah.
I just, like... I've never seen Top Gun before, and I really expected more Michael Ironside. I was like, that's
Where's Roy? Where's Roy?
Where is he? That's it? Is he going to show... He doesn't show up again, okay?
Yeah.
That's just...
What if he was in the big mission at the end? Or at least, like, in the control room on the USS Enterprise.
Something.
While they're flying the mission at the end.
Something.
Him and Iceman, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the source of the other... part of his typecasting. There's
mm-hmm.
Michael Ironside, who, like, eats puppies and kicks babies,
mm-hmm.
and then as like the psycho freak, and then yeah, Michael Ironside, Mr. Military,
who also
starts in Top Gun,
eats puppies and kills babies or whatever.
Sometimes
kicks babies.
But this is
I don't know.
This is not the psycho freak. This is the stern authority, Michael Ironside.
Yes.
And. I mean, Hudson kind of begins here.
Yeah.
But again, Hudson is so much more than Jester.
Yes.
Hudson is a three-dimensional person with feelings and history. And
well, if Michael Ironside would have had, like, I don't know, 4 more scenes, maybe he would have been. He wasn't exactly getting a lot of time to develop his character, show mm-hmm, us mm-hmm. who he was. Have emotions, etc.
Now, I know there's something you want to talk about with Top Gun that has nothing to do with Michael Ironside at all. So please, please tell the people your number one Top Gun memory.
Tom Cruise can't fucking kiss. Why does he spend that entire movie, anytime he has to kiss someone, just licking into their mouths like he's a fucking dog? It's so gross.
It's like he's a dentist who does not have hands, just sort of poking around in there.
Like, I need to feel around, make sure you don't have a cavity. And, like, the they do and all
he's
these
going so slow and gentle and very, very thorough.
They do all these kissing scenes where they're like in silhouette.
Yes.
So you can see like the light between their mouths and stuff. And all you see is his tongue just like digging. It's just digging in there, like looking for gold. It's fucking nasty. There's nothing about the way he kisses in that movie that is at all sexy. It's far too much tongue. It's really, really off-putting. I would have hated to be that actress.
But hey, Meg Ryan shows up and she's adorable. I love Meg Ryan in this as Mrs. Goose.
Yeah, and you know who probably doesn't kiss like that? Goose.
Yeah.
Like, ugh. I never liked Tom Cruise anyways, but now I'm like really like, dude, fuck you. Like, no wonder why Katie Holmes divorced your ass.
Yeah, you think he kept doing it through the 90s?
Yes!
And the 2000s?
I believe that is the only way that man knows how to kiss. Like a digger, yeah, yeah. Like a construction digger, just trying to get in there.
So when the soundtrack is singing Take My Breath Away, you think it's Please Suffocate Me, I Want to Die, just to get out of this?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Absolutely.
I think it is interesting that in the course of his flight school, Tom Cruise's Maverick learns three big lessons. He fails three different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And two of them come up in the final actual combat mission at the end of the movie, right? He recovers from losing control in a jet wash.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike when Goose died.
Spoilers.
Yeah. He refuses to abandon his wingman. Unlike when he fails the test on the second flight they show. But the third one never comes up. He never has to succeed by respecting the rules of engagement.
No.
Because he's a fucking maverick, yeah.
You should respect the engagements of kissing.
You're never going to get an engagement. You do like that.
There are certain things we don't do on the first date. And then like always, every time. Just gotta pull it back some.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's gone below the encounter floor.
Fucking hated it so bad. Ugh.
But yeah, Top Gun's a pretty good movie, though. I don't know. I mean, it's good.
Fine.
I like it.
It's okay. It's,
yeah. Okay.
Well, it's fine.
Do you want to watch the Miles Teller one? I know you're a much bigger fan of Miles Teller than you are Tom Cruise.
I'm not really big on any military movies, which I know the sci-fi stuff really throws. It does not go together.
Yeah, yeah.
But
if your sci-fi is military, you like them to be underdogs or weird, like Maverick.
Yeah.
I guess the word is just on my mind. Like,
I guess
the Rocinante crew is not signed up with any of the factions.
Oh, I love them.
They're just freelancers.
You know what I hate?
Freelancers with clear preferences for one of the factions, but yeah. But anyhow, that is Whiskers for this week. Happy November, everyone.
Happy November! It's Edmund Fitzgerald month.
It's Edmund Fitzgerald week. Yay!
Woo!
Anyhow, I would love to ask everyone to please leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to us that allows you to do so.
Yeah, don't be like the fucker who left 2 stars.
Apparently.
And didn't. Even have the courage to say why. Coward.
I'm reminding my dear co-host of the chain of command and the importance of our mission. Otherwise, she will try to track down and murder some anonymous stranger. And I think that would impair our ability to accomplish our mission.
Fine. You should tell your friends, though.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Word of mouth is really nice.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic mm-hmm. thing to do with your mouth.
I appreciate our listener who has told all of AO3 about us.
That's true. Whiskers is now an AO3 tag.
Yes. And I am here for it. The day that someone comes to this show and is like, hey, I found you because of the AO3 tag, my life is complete. What else do I need to do?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, tell your friends.
You can also find things like that or friends like these by following us on Blue Sky at Whiskers. That's WSKRS.bisky.social.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a fun time over there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's it. With that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Captain Oliver Hudson,
I'm Captain Oliver Hudson of the SeaQuest!
Accurate.
Yeah.
Very accurate.
Yeah.
He says it all the time.
All the time.